Okay, great. Okay, so welcome everyone. We're going to be continuing on our series of conversion and covenant, the halacha, history, and science of being Jewish. For the past few weeks, we've been talking about the status of the Avos, the forefathers, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and their families, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, and the Shvatim, and the tribes, trying to understand what role, both halachically, both legally, as well as much more broadly speaking, what they mean to us as sort of being the forerunners of the Jewish people. The past two, three classes, we've spoken about certain instances where the Avos and their families seem to not have kept the Torah or needed to violate certain commandments in the Torah, despite the fact that there is a significant body of rabbinic literature that seems to assert to the contrary that they kept all of the mitzvos, even before the Torah was given. So this week, I want to sort of wrap up that discussion by talking about one more instance where they seem to have at least delayed following certain mitzvos that we Jews fulfill since the Torah was given. So I'm going to share the screen now with the source sheet. And just as a reminder, please, if you could keep yourselves muted for the class part. And then afterwards, feel free to unmute if you have any questions or comments or thoughts. And as always, please feel free to use the chat feature if you ever want to share something. So the title for this week's class is called The Overlapping Worlds of Chabad and Brisk, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and the Lubavitcher Rebbe on Volunteerism in Halacha. I want to start with a quote that you could see at the top of the page. It's a quote from Mother Teresa. It may seem a little innocuous at first. To me, what was much more significant was the context in which I found it. I was looking last night for a quote about volunteerism to sort of serve as a jump start. And as you may imagine, a lot of them have the word volunteer in them. If you look on the internet for quotes about volunteering, your odds are going to find a lot of quotes that have the word volunteer. This was one of the first ones that came up, and as you can see, it does not have the word volunteer in it at all. The quote from Mother Teresa is, "I am a little pencil in the hand of a writing God who is sending a love letter to the world." So, as I just said, there's no mention of volunteerism at all. So that's just one thing that's interesting to note if we're trying to understand what volunteerism means. And another interesting point, which will also become very relevant towards the end of the class, is that Mother Teresa is essentially comparing herself to a tool or to an instrument. Now, unless you live in a magical universe, sort of like Beauty and the Beast, where all of the objects are animated and can talk and think, most tools that we have nowadays can't think for themselves. You know, perhaps soon robots can, but nowadays, a pencil, even if it's a smart pen that you use on a tablet, it doesn't think for itself. It doesn't have its own will, and it certainly doesn't volunteer of its own accord. The only reason why it's writing is because the writer is picking it up and pushing it against the paper. And so it's just interesting to note that Mother Teresa compared herself to a writing implement, something that does not evoke any imagery of volunteerism at all. And that's something that I want to sort of think about and for you to keep in the back of your minds as we go through this topic. So as the title indicates, we're going to learn about volunteerism in halacha. Now, it doesn't mean volunteering in the civic sense, like volunteering to do kindness for somebody or to help serve in the community. That's obviously a very important topic in Judaism, chesed and helping and being part of a community. Just parenthetically, the Gemara in Tainus says that one of the most important things that a person can do during a communal crisis, whether it be a health one or a political crisis or anything at which or any circumstance in which the entire community is affected is to be part of the community and to help out the community. So obviously volunteerism in general is a positive thing. But what the specific area of volunteerism is electing to do something in Judaism. How does Judaism look at such a person? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? Is it somewhere in between? Is it a gray area? So if you look on the, if you look at the chart or the small table at the beginning, we are going to go back to the three paradigms of the avos, of the forefathers, not keeping certain mitzvos. So the last one, the avos chose not to fulfill certain mitzvos. There are certain instances in the Torah where we would have expected the forefathers to do something that's a mitzvah for us nowadays, and yet they did not. Perhaps the most famous example is Avraham waiting to circumcise himself until being commanded to do so. So as we had mentioned earlier in the Gemara in previous weeks, the Gemara tells us that the avos, all of the forefathers, or at the very least Avraham, kept all of the mitzvos in the Torah, even though he was not commanded to do so. Excuse me. And so one of the many, and so one of the questions that many of the commentaries ask is that, well, if you look in the Torah, Avraham did not circumcise himself until he was explicitly commanded to do so by God at the end of Parshas Lech Lecha. If we assume that Avraham was able to derive or intuit all of the mitzvot, even without being explicitly commanded to by God, why didn't he do bris milah as well? Why didn't he circumcise himself beforehand if he figured out that that was probably a good thing to do? And so there are several answers that are given. For this class, I want to focus on two of them. And as we'll see, they're probably connected. If you look at source number one, this is from the commentary of the Mizrahi, or as it's abbreviated, the Re'eim, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, who wrote a commentary on Rashi's commentary. Sort of, it's called a super commentary on Rashi, on the Torah. And so he gives one answer as to why Avraham did not circumcise himself before being commanded to. If we look at source number one, it says, Mitzvas mila lo kaima ad shenitztaveba. Avraham did not fulfill the mitzvah of circumcision until he was commanded to do so. Mishum diyodeya haya she'asid lehitztavos aleha. Somehow, whether maybe Hashem told him, or maybe he was able to have divine inspiration, some sort of Ruach HaKodesh, he somehow knew that he would ultimately be commanded to perform circumcision, and therefore he waited. Va'az yihye mitzuva ve'ose. And so therefore he wanted to wait to do it, not because, as some might say, well, if you know you're ultimately going to be commanded to, then the implication is that you don't, the person who's commanding you does not want you to do it right now. Meaning you could have just answered that since Hashem was going to tell Avram in 5 years, I want you to circumcise yourself, that the implication is that until that point, God doesn't want you to. But the Re'eim gives a different answer. He says the reason why Avraham waited is that since he would be ultimately commanded to do so later, he wanted to do it then because ve'oz yihyeh mitzuveh ve'oseh. He would fulfill the mitzvah as somebody who is commanded to. Now that is a halachic term, mitzuvah ve'oseh. Mitzuvah ve'oseh means one who is commanded to do a mitzvah and he does it, or he or she does it. And that is contrasted with the term eino mitzuvah ve'oseh, somebody who is not commanded to do a certain mitzvah and nevertheless volunteers or elects to do it anyway. And so, as we'll see, the Gemara in Kiddushin in source number two discusses these two categories and tries to figure out which one is better. Is it better, or what is greater? Is it greater to fulfill a mitzvah when you're commanded to do it, or is it greater to fulfill a mitzvah when you're not commanded to do so, but you do it anyway? So the Gemara in Kiddushin in source number two discusses this idea. Just because it was too long, I wasn't able to include it on the source sheet, but there's a very famous story in the Gemara in Kiddushin about the mitzvah of kibud av va'em, of honoring parents. So there's a very famous story about a non-Jew. His name was Dama ben Nesina. Ostensibly, he was a wealthy upper-class Roman. And even though non-Jews, at least according to many people, are not obligated in the mitzvah of kibud avaim, some people say that non-Jews are as well, but at least explicitly, the commandment was only given to Jews. Nevertheless, the Gemara says that Dama ben Nesina was extremely, extremely careful about fulfilling the mitzvah of kibud avaim. The story is that the choshen, the breastplate that was used by the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, they found out that they were missing one of the stones that was supposed to go in there. And the only person in the region that had this stone was this Dama ben Nesina character. And so they went to travel. All of the Kohanim, the priests and the sages, they went to travel to his house. They made him an offer and he said, well, I'd love to, but unfortunately the stone is in a safe and the key to that safe is under my father's pillow and I'm not going to wake him up. And the sages said, listen, we need to buy it. And if not, we'll take our business elsewhere. We'll travel somewhere else to get it. And he said, okay. And he gave that up. And he was ultimately rewarded for that financial sacrifice by honoring his parents. He was rewarded that one of the cows in his herd gave birth to a para aduma, a red heifer, which is extremely, extremely important and very rare for the purification process of all Jews. A Jew is not allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash area when they're in a state of ritual impurity, if they come in contact with the dead body. And the only way that you can sort of lift that impurity is to be sprinkled with the ashes of a red heifer. They were extremely rare. The Gemara says that there are only 10 throughout all of history. And so therefore, the Beis HaMikdash, the temple, would pay a huge sum of money, much greater than the stone that they were originally going to buy. And so they went back to Dama ben Nesina and they offered him this huge amount of money. So this was his reward for honoring his parents. And so now, after that story is over, the Gemara takes a step back. And it says, beginning of source number 2, Uma mi she'eino mitzuva ve'ose, and if one who is not commanded to do a mitzvah and is given such a great reward, kach mitzuva ve'ose al achas kama ve'kama, then in our case, Jews who are obligated for kibud avaim, all the more so will they receive an even greater reward than Dama ben Nesina, who was not commanded to in the mitzvah of kibud avaim. How do we know this? Dama Reb Chiya, the Reb Chiya said, Gadol mitzuva ve'ose mimi she'eino mitzuva ve'ose. So Reb Chiya said, greater is one who is obligated to perform a mitzvah and does it than one who is not obligated to do it and voluntarily performs it. And then the Gemara follows up with a very interesting back and forth. Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef said, Meiresh, initially, Hava Amina, I used to say, Man da hava amar li halacha, Kireb Yehuda, da amar suma pater min ha-mitzvos, avidna yomatava l'rabbanan. Rav Yosef said that I used to say, I will make a feast, I will make a banquet for whoever says that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, who says that a blind person is exempt from mitzvos. So, Rabbi Yosef was blind. And so Rabbi Yosef said, anybody who says that I am pater, I am exempt from mitzvos, and yet I voluntarily choose to do them, if you say that that's the halacha, I will give them a party because I'm so happy. Since I'm voluntarily doing these mitzvos, it must be that I'm doing such a great thing and I'm getting so much more reward and it's so much more beautiful to God than for somebody that is obligated to do it and does it. But Behashta dishamita lahada amar Reb Chanina gadol mitzuva ve'ose mimi she'eino mitzuva ve'ose adaraba manda amar li de'ein halacha k'Reb Yehuda avidna yomatava l'rabbanan. But now once Reb Chanina said, once Rabbi Chanina said that greater is one who is obligated to perform a mitzvah and does it than one who isn't obligated and voluntarily performs it, now I will make a feast and for whoever says that the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yehuda and says that a blind person is obligated in mitzvos because that's where I will get the greater reward. So what comes out from this Gemara is that there are two types of people, someone who is obligated to do a mitzvah and somebody who volunteers to do a mitzvah. And the Gemara says that Godol mitzvah va'oseh mimi she'eino mitzvah va'oseh. A person who does a mitzvah because they're obligated to do so gets a greater reward than one who isn't obligated to do it and nevertheless volunteers to do it. It's a little counterintuitive. I would have said that if you're volunteering to do it, then that must mean that that's greater because I don't have to and I'm still doing it. Usually when we praise somebody or we're extolling somebody, we highlight the stuff that they go above and beyond what they're expected to do, not that they just fulfill the basic requirements and expectations. And yet, nevertheless, the Gemara says, no, greater is one who is obligated to perform it. And so the Mizrahi said, that's the reason why Avraham waited. Avraham knew that he would ultimately be commanded in the mitzvah of circumcision. And therefore, he wanted to do the mitzvah in the greatest way possible, i.e., when he was commanded to do it and not when he was volunteering to do it. So that's one answer as to why Avraham waited to circumcise himself, to wait for the command from God. There's one other answer that I want to look at with you, and that is by the Panim Yafos. The Panim Yafos was a very interesting character. He was one of the early Chassidish Rebbes. He's also one of the few Chassidish Rebbes to also write halachic commentaries to the Gemara. He wrote a couple of svarim on Gemara as well, in addition to Chassidish svar. So the Panim Yafos was his commentary on the Torah, and so he offers another suggestion as to why Avraham waited. If we look at source number 3, Mipnei ma lo kayim mitzvas mila kodem shenitztava, why didn't Avraham fulfill the mitzvah of circumcision before he was commanded? Nira, it appears, Be'isr chovel ne'esar gam b'nei Noach, that the prohibition of wounding was given to Gentiles as well. After the Mabel, after the great flood, Hashem tells Noach, he sort of creates this new pact with humanity. And one of the changes that occurred after the flood was that humanity was now allowed to eat animals. Up until that point, we were vegetarians. We were only allowed to eat vegetation, but we were not allowed to eat meat. And because we cared for the animals during the flood, essentially they're only alive because of us, humanity was now permitted to eat them. God qualified that statement by saying that even though we are allowed to kill animals for food, we are not allowed to kill human beings. The pasuk says, "Aches dimchem edrosh." I will seek accountability for your blood. Now that means that we're not allowed to kill other people. We're not allowed to kill ourselves. And in addition to that, the Gemara says that that prohibition also applies for wounding. We are not allowed to wound another human being or wound ourselves, essentially, if it draws any blood. Now, that opens up a whole Pandora's box. So how are we allowed to do surgery? How are we allowed to do certain medical procedures? It's a very complicated halachic discussion. Obviously, one is allowed to, but that's beyond the scope of our discussion. But what the Panim Yafos is saying is that in general, in the abstract, it is prohibited to even wound yourself. You're not allowed to draw blood. The lav dafka ketala, the prohibition is not only about killing, it is about wounding or drawing blood. Elafilu chavala ba'atzmo, even wounding oneself, the imkain, lo haya rashai bishvil hachumra, shehichmir al atzmo b'meshalo nitztave litchos iser chovel. And so the Panim Yafos says that, well, what is bris milah? It's essentially drawing blood. You're doing an unnecessary medical procedure. You're doing an unnecessary medical procedure that results in wounding yourself and drawing blood. So when God commands you to do that, okay, fine. God's command overrides his other command. But if you're doing it as a personal stringency, if you're just doing it because you want to do it, even though you might have very good intentions, your personal chumrah, your personal stringency that you want to voluntarily take upon yourself cannot override a divine injunction. And so therefore the Panim Yafo says, that's why Avraham waited. It wasn't because, as the Mizrahi suggests, that it would be better to do it later. Rather, it was actually prohibited for him to do now. It would be prohibited to do it until God explicitly said, you're allowed to. So these are two answers that are given as to why Avraham waited. Now, at first glance, these answers are just two parallel answers. They don't really have anything to do with each other. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, not explicitly, but the way he presents these ideas actually connects them. Before we get to how they're connected, I want to sort of round out this discussion by highlighting one other rabbinic source which throws a wrench into our equation. Up until now, based on the Gemara in Kiddushin, we've been working under the assumption that gadol mitzvah ve'oseh mimi she'eino mitzvah ve'oseh, that fulfilling a mitzvah because you're obligated to do it is greater than fulfilling a mitzvah because you want to do it, because you're volunteering to do it. Despite the fact that it's greater, no one's denying that it's still a good thing to volunteer it. We're working under the assumption that volunteering or electing to doing something in Judaism is still a value. It just might be not as great as fulfilling an explicit commandment. But nobody up until this point has been denying that it's still a good thing to do. There is, however, a Gemara in the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud in Maseches Brachos, which seems to say just that, that it's actually a bad thing to volunteer to do something in Judaism. If we look at source number 4, the Yerushalmi in Brachos says, V'tani Chizkiya, Chizkiya taught, kol mi shehu patur mi davar. Anybody that is exempt from something, va'ose, and nevertheless does it, nikra hedyot, is called a foolish simpleton. And even though this is in the Yerushalmi, there is halachic evidence that we follow this ruling to this day. If we look at source number 5, the Rama, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, his glosses on the Shulchan Aruch during the laws of Sukkah, he quotes this Gemara Yerushalmi. As many of you are familiar with, the mitzvah to eat in the Sukkah is only when you would normally live under those conditions. So if it's extremely, extremely hot, so much so that it is so uncomfortable that you could not bear to be in the sukkah, if you're in pain from being in the sukkah under those weather conditions, then you are patur min hasukkah, then you are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah, because that's not how you would normally live. And the metric for the mitzvah of sukkah is teshvu ke'en taduru, that you're supposed to live in the sukkah like you would live in your house. And so if it's 100 degrees in your house, you wouldn't live in that house. So too, if it's 100 degrees outside, you know, if you're in the desert and it's a late summer and you're in Eretz Yisrael and you're in the Negev somewhere and it's boiling hot, you're exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. A case which is much more relevant to us in New York during Sukkot is rain. If it's raining so much so that you would not sort of live in a house with that degree of precipitation. The metric that the Gemara gives is that if the rain would seep in through the schach, through the branches on the roof and ruin your soup, then you're exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. And the Rama says, v'chol ha-patur min ha-sukkah, v'eino yotze misham. So let's say you want to be a super righteous person, and even though it's raining and you're not obligated to sit and eat in the sukkah, you're deciding to. You want to do it. So even though it's raining, you're going to still have your dinner in the sukkah. The Rama says, "Eino mekabel alav schar." You don't get reward for that. The eino ella hedyotos, and that person is considered a foolish simpleton for doing it. Now, for me, that's a little bit hurtful, because apparently the minhag chabad is to actually still eat in the sukkah even when it's raining. And there's a whole lot of a discussion as to why certain chassidim still sit in the rain in the sukkah. Again, a discussion for another time. But the Rama explicitly says that such a practice is foolish. You don't get any reward. It doesn't seem to have any value whatsoever. It's not that it's just not as good as fulfilling the mitzvah when you're commanded to, it seems to be worthless or even a negative thing. So if that's the case, how do we square the Gemara in Kiddushin with the Yerushalmi in Brachos? How do we square the statement that volunteering might not be as good as fulfilling an actual commandment, but it's still not a bad thing, with the Gemara Yerushalmi Brachos, which seems to say that it's foolish, it's worthless? So the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, in source number 6, he creates a distinction. In his commentary on Brachos, on the Mishnayos in Brachos, he says that there's a distinction between these two cases. He says, in the bolded part, Venira, it appears, Kol shehu mitzuva be'etzen, ela shelo hitzrichu chachamim imosehu, nosnin lo schar she'asa mitzvah min hamovchar. The distinction is whether what the person is doing is inherently a mitzvah or not. So let's take kibud av ha'em, for example. Everybody agrees that kibud av ha'em is inherently a mitzvah. And Dama ben Nesina, this non-Jew, was just not commanded in it. It wasn't that he was told by God, oh, you know, I don't want you to do this. It was just, there's this abstract mitzvah out there that's an objective good, but you're just not obligated to do it. And nevertheless, he voluntarily accepted upon himself to do it. So that kind of case might not be as great as somebody fulfilling the mitzvah because they're commanded to, but it's still objectively a good thing. In contrast, is where the Torah or God or the sages explicitly say, this is not inherently a mitzvah, or it's a mitzvah, but you are explicitly told that you are exempt from doing it, then that's considered foolish. So when a person is sitting in the sukkah by the rain, it's not that it's objectively a good thing to sit in the sukkah in the rain, and it's just that this person's not obligated to do it. It's no, the act of sitting in the sukkah in the rain is inherently worthless. It's not a mitzvah at all. And therefore, that is considered foolish. So now let's take this back to the Avos. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and their families. Which sort of case, which box do they fall into? Obviously, we wouldn't call them fools. The Gemara seems to say that it's a good thing that they did all these mitzvahs. And so therefore, the reason why they were allowed to voluntarily take upon themselves to do mitzvahs, and you know, generally, not by circumcision for the reasons that we just said, but the reason why in general they were allowed to take upon mitzvahs for themselves is because those acts were inherently good acts, and they just weren't Jewish yet. They just didn't have an obligation to do it. Therefore, they could voluntarily take it upon themselves to do it. However, if they were explicitly or implicitly told that while this is a mitzvah, you are exempted from doing it, then they would not be allowed to do it. They would be considered fools. And so what emerges from this distinction between doing something that's objectively a mitzvah and something where God explicitly tells you don't do it, even though it might be a mitzvah in other cases, what emerges is that the point of distinction, so someone asked, what about non-Jews observing Shabbos? So that's a very interesting question. It's actually, the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, one of the Rishonim, wrote a series of drashos, a series of sermons called Drashos HaRan, and he actually talks about this point. That's one of sort of the distinctions that he makes, not about being called a hedyo, not about being called a foolish simpleton, but comparing and contrasting Gadol Mitzuvah Va'oseh from an Eino Mitzuvah Va'oseh. And he sort of alludes to what we spoke about a few weeks ago, If you remember, we spoke about a Rashba. The Rashba was asked why Yaakov was allowed to marry two sisters. And he said that basically for some Kabbalistic reasons, Yaakov decided that the Torah didn't apply to him. The Torah's prohibition didn't apply to him. And because the Torah wasn't given yet, he was allowed to make that calculation. And in that context, the Rashba says that certain mitzvos apply to certain people and don't apply to other people. Certain mitzvos apply to certain times and don't apply to other times. And certain mitzvos apply to certain things and don't apply to other things. And he says the reason is that these involve deeply mystical spiritual calculations that the vast majority of us are not sensitive enough to pick up or understand. And we have to just trust God's infinite wisdom. And so the Ran, sort of piggybacking off of that idea, says the reason why a gadol mitzvah va'osa, somebody who fulfills a mitzvah because they're commanded to, is greater than one who volunteers to, is because there's a reason why God commanded one person and didn't command another person. We might not understand the reason, but that's one, but God has his reasons. And so the fact that he obligated this person and not that person, or this time and not that time, it means that it is objectively greater. I didn't include that on the sheet because I wanted to present a slightly different answer from somebody else, but that is one answer that's that the Ran gives. That is one answer that is commonly given. There's another answer, which is in source number 7, which is what I want to focus on now. And that is the Ritva in Kiddushin. The Ritva was pretty much a contemporary of the Ran. And on that Gemara in Kiddushin, he gives a different explanation as to why volunteering to do something in Judaism, even though it still might be a good thing, is not on as high as a level as somebody that is obligated to do it. Now, as I said before, what emerges from our discussion is that the metric between something that somebody being considered a fool for volunteering to do it and somebody who is considered to be doing something good by volunteering to do it is whether it is objectively a mitzvah. The metric is whether God commanded, maybe not you, but commanded somebody to do it. That makes it an objective good, which you are volunteering to take upon yourself. But if you just decide to do something that God doesn't say is objectively a good thing, then that is considered to be foolish. And so the Ritva sort of piggybacks off of that. And he uses this to explain why somebody is greater if they're commanded to do it. And let's look at source number 7. He says, V'Rabbeinu HaGadol, the great rabbi, which is the Ramban, his teacher, Pirish, he explained, Shehamitzvos einan lahanos hakel yisparach. That the reason why we do mitzvos is not to give anything to God. It's not to benefit God. That's, Hashem does not get any benefit from us doing mitzvos. He doesn't lose out by us doing averos, God forbid. What is the purpose of a mitzvah? Ela lizchusenu. It is for our merit. The purpose of God giving humanity mitzvos was for humanity's benefit and not for God's. As we often say, if we want somebody to say Kaddish, we say a short phrase, Reb Chananya ben Akashya Omer, Ratza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lezakos Es Yisrael. God wanted to give merits to the Jewish people, Lefichach Hirba Lahem Torah U'mitzvos, and therefore he gave them an abundance of Torah and mitzvos. So the mitzvos are given for humanity's benefit. U'mi Shehu Mitzuvah Kayim Gzeres HaMelech. Scharo meruba yoser mizeh shalokia mitzvah samelach. And so if we follow that logic, that mitzvos are for the benefit of humanity, then somebody who fulfills the mitzvah of a king, somebody who is commanded to do a mitzvah, is effectively fulfilling the command of the king, and therefore gets more reward than somebody that does not fulfill the mitzvah of the king by doing this mitzvah. Meaning there's not... What he's saying is that there's nothing inherently valuable about the mitzvah itself, but rather the value is that you're fulfilling the commandment of the king. And that's why somebody who is a mitzvah v'osa gets more reward than somebody that volunteers to do it. But then he qualifies what he says. He says, mikol makom, but nevertheless, af hu roy lekabel schar. Somebody who voluntarily does a mitzvah still gets a reward. Shaharei, mitov levav v'chasidus, from the goodness of the person's heart and their desire to go above and beyond, lasos mitzvah Hashem yisbarach. They want to do the command of God. And then he says, v'dafka b'mitzvah shetziva Hashem yisbarach la'acherim, sheyesh lo behen ratzon. We only say that volunteerism is good in halacha when you decide, when you volunteer to do a mitzvah that Hashem commanded somebody else to do, because that evinces God's will. By God commanding somebody else to do it, it shows that that's something that's good. And so even though you might not be commanded to do it, you're still doing something good, and therefore you still get reward. Aval, however, if you decide to make up a new mitzvah, zuhi sha'amru, this is what the sages said in the Yerushalmi, kol she'enu mitzvah bedavar va'osehu nikra hedyot. Anybody who does something that they're not commanded to is regarded as a fool. And so the Ritva says something very similar to the Vilna Gaon, and says that the distinction is if you decide to make up something. If you volunteer to make up a new mitzvah in the Torah, that's considered foolish. Why? Because the point of the Torah is trying to follow the will of God and follow the will of the sort of commander, if you will. So if you're commanded to do a mitzvah, then you're obviously fulfilling the command of the king. If you're not obligated to do it, you're still, at least in a certain way, fulfilling the command of the king if you volunteer to do something that the king commanded somebody else to do. But if you just decide to make up any practice, it might be a nice thing to do, it might be a good thing to do, but it doesn't have anything to do with the will of the commander, with the will of the king. And so that is sort of the distinction that the Rishonim, that the medieval commentaries make to try to explain why volunteerism in halacha is good under certain circumstances when you're following an explicit command of that was given to someone else, but nevertheless, why fulfilling a mitzvah, being commanded to do so, is still considered to be greater. And this was sort of the standard assumption for many centuries. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, in his character, in his trademark, prose and intellect, he writes it so beautifully in a much more modern parlance. I have two sources from Rav Lichtenstein on the topic, and in the footnotes he references this idea that we just quoted in source number 7 from the Ritva in the name of the Ramban. Rav Lichtenstein quotes this idea, and he explains it. I don't think he changes it, but he reframes it in a slightly different angle, in a slightly different formulation, and it's so beautiful, so I want to share it with you. You look in source number 8, this is an excerpt from the book Be'or Panecha Yahalechun, By His Light, Character and Values in the Service of God. This is a collection of shiurim and talks that Rav Lichtenstein gave on sort of the character building of an Eved Hashem, of a servant of God. And I'll read it to you just because it's really quite beautiful. He says, presumably, one who is eino mitzuvah va'osa, who is not commanded but nevertheless performs acts in accordance with his personal inclination, and therefore attains more self-fulfillment than one who is simply commanded, do this. No one asks the commanded individual whether he likes what he is doing. And so we might think that that's good. Yet Chazal, the sages, said, Godol ha-mitzuvah ve'ose, greater is somebody that is commanded. And here comes the important part. Thus placing at the center, or even at the apex of our spiritual lives, the sense of being called and commanded. This is what religious existence in general is about. The concept of mitzvah presupposes an encounter between someone who issues a command and someone who receives it. This is one sense of the term mitzvah, the act and the experience of God issuing the command and man absorbing it. What Rav Lichtenstein is picking up on is sort of this underlying assumption by the Ramban and that school of thought that the cornerstone of the mitzvah presupposes that the main value is fulfilling the will of God and not the act itself and not the result of the mitzvah itself. And Rav Lichtenstein is questioning, well, why is that the primary value? Why is the primary value of the mitzvah the sense of commandedness? Why isn't it the act of just the result of the mitzvah or the perfection of humanity by doing the mitzvah? And he said, no, the actual point of the mitzvah or the main central tenet of Judaism when it comes to mitzvos is the relationship of God and humanity, God being the commander and humanity being the commandee, if you will. This is even more explicitly formulated by Rav Lichtenstein in source number 9. This was in a general publication. It was called Rabbinic and Lay Communal Authority. So Rav Lichtenstein was asked to write a chapter. He wrote a chapter called Communal Governments, Lay and Rabbinic and Overview. And so he restates what he said beforehand. He just puts it in greater, he highlights a certain part even more. He says, the concept of mitzvah, our stance vis-a-vis the Ribbono Shel Olam as commanded beings, lies at the epicenter of Jewish existence. Not only do we glorify servile fealty to divine orders, but following Chazal, our sages, and in the face of intuited common morality, we revel in the contention that action in response to the halachic call is superior to the same act voluntarily undertaken. As we said before, gadol mitzvah ve'ose, greater is somebody who performs a mitzvah because they're commanded. And if we go to the bold part, he says, and it is because over and above the practical result of the mitzvah, the halachic charge renders the act intrinsically and qualitatively superior. Why? In as much as it engages the agent in a dialogic encounter with his master. He said the reason why commandedness is important is because now the relationship between God and humanity is a two-way street. By volunteering to do something, it's one way. It's upwards. It's humanity giving to God. But when a person is a mitzvah va'oseh, when a person is commanded, Rav Lichtenstein says, now it's a two-way street. That's what the Ramban meant. The reason why fulfilling the commandment of the king is such a great value is not that just because God is the king and we're supposed to fulfill what he says. That's obviously true. But Rav Lichtenstein says the reason why that's so central is because now the relationship goes both ways. Now the relationship is a two-way street. And that's what a beautiful relationship is, something that works both ways. And this is an idea that the Lubavitcher Rebbe developed as well. The Lubavitcher Rebbe gave a number of talks on the topic of the forefathers and their halachic Jewish status. And he was, in general, very interested in sort of synthesizing halacha as chassidus and agada and machshava, Jewish thought and Jewish law. The Rebbe used to synthesize that many, many times. And one of the instances that he did it was in this topic of the status of the forefathers before the Torah was given. He discussed this topic in numerous occasions, and he actually quotes both answers that were given. He quotes the Mizrahi's answer that the reason why Avraham waited to circumcise himself was because he was not commanded to do so. And he quotes the Panim Yafos' answer that the reason why Avram waited was because it was actually forbidden for him to do it because he would be wounding himself. And the Rebbe did not see those two as contradictory, but rather sort of two layers of understanding a much deeper issue, which is very similar to what Rav Lichtenstein says. We don't have time to read the Rebbe's writings all inside. If you go to page 5, source number 10, We'll just read some of the bolded parts. So if you look in the first first box in the chart, the bold part, this is where he says the Panim Yafos' answer, that the reason why Avraham waited to circumcise was because it would be forbidden, since he would be wounding himself. And he says that the forefathers' observance of the Torah was a personal stringency. So therefore, in the bold part, if a mitzvah they were commanded in would contradict something they were obligated to do, they wouldn't do the thing that they wanted to volunteer to do. And then in the second box, he puts it quite poignantly, Kiyum HaTorah b'mikra zeh, the observing the Torah in this scenario, hu'i kiyum ahidur v'hachumra, is to not fulfill this optional personal stringency that you want to do. So again, just to put it in more contemporary terms, if it is not safe for a person to daven at a minyan, then what the Torah is telling you to do at that point is that you're not supposed to daven at a minyan, even if there's a personal stringency to do it. And so, therefore, the Rebbe says the reason why Avram was not permitted to circumcise himself until commanded to do so is because the act of circumcision would be spilling blood, which is prohibited unless God authorizes otherwise. So that's one answer. And that's what the Rebbe calls sort of the derech hapshat, the simple halachic explanation for why Avraham waited. But he says there's a deeper explanation, which is much more similar to the Mizrahi's explanation of wanting to wait to be commanded to. This point is very central in Hasidic and especially Chabad thought, and it's based on a medrash. In source number 11, on the bottom of page 6, there's a medrash in Shmos Rabbah. David HaMelech says, Af al pi shegozar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashamayim Shamayim LaShem Ve'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. So David HaMelech said in Tehillim that the heavens are for God and the earth was given to humanity. Nevertheless, and so David is figuratively talking. What is that compared to? Mashal l'mahadavar domeh. What can that be compared to? It is compared l'melech shegozar. It is a comparable to a king that decreed v'amar b'nei romi lo yardu l'surya u'v'nei surya lo yalu l'romi. It is like a king that commanded that Romans cannot descend to Syria and Syrians cannot ascend to Rome. So what does that mean? So the Medrash was written in the early centuries of the Common Era. And during the early Byzantine Empire, or essentially post the destruction of the Second Temple and continuing on into the Byzantine era with Diocletian, the area of Judea was split up into two areas. If you want to take a look at the map on the sixth page, you can see there's a line, sort of a diagonal line, cutting through Israel. So on the sort of lower the lower left half of Israel, where the cursor is, I don't know if you can see the cursor, but sort of the part that has most of Israel in it, like Yerushalayim, Hebron, Tel Aviv, Ashkelon, Gaza, all of that was considered to be Judea or Rome. The northeastern half, the Golan, part of the Galil, some of Jordan, that was referred to as Syria, that was referred to as Syria. And oftentimes, due to political unrest and political tension, caravans and people were not allowed to travel in between those two regions. And so David HaMelech and the sages say that initially, from a spiritual perspective, the entire world was like that. Just like in the time of Diocletian, people in Syria couldn't travel to Judea and vice versa, so too, when God created the world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Gazar Va'amar HaShamayim Shamayim LaShem V'Ya'aretz Nasan Livnei Adam. The heavens were given to God, and the earth was given to humanity. And no one could meet. No one could meet from those two realms. Kishebikesh liten haTorah, but when God gave the Torah to the Jews, bitel gzeira rishona, he abolished, he nullified that initial decree. V'amar, and he said, hatachtonim yalu l'elyonim, the people in the lower world can ascend to the upper world, and the upper worlds can descend into the lower world. And I will be the one to initiate this process, as it says, that God descended onto Mount Sinai, Uksiv, and it also says, Ve'el Moshe Amar Alei El Hashem. And then Moshe was commanded to ascend to heaven. Essentially, humanity could ascend to heaven on God's terms. So this medrash is a very interesting figurative description of what happened on Matan Torah. But what's the significance of it? So the Rebbe explained in source number 12 in Likutei Sichos that there was a tremendous paradigm shift that occurred by Matan Torah. I had hoped to give this, I had hoped to teach this piece shortly before Shavuos to give us a better appreciation of what Shavuos is. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get up to it. So hopefully we'll all be able to appreciate what happened at Matan Torah each day of our lives, and hopefully we'll also try to keep it in our minds for next Shavuos as well. The Rebbe in source number 12, in the first volume of talks that was ever published by the Rebbe, he discusses this medrash. He says the answer for, or the reason for why Avraham refrained from circumcising himself can be understood based on this medrash. He says, Lifnei Matan Torah, in the first box, he says, before Matan Torah, this decree was given that Romans can't ascend to Syria and Syrians can't ascend to Rome. Hainu, what does that mean? Shelo yiyeh kol kesher ben gashmius l'ruchnius. What the Medrash is saying, the symbolism in the Medrash, is that there was no connection between the physical and the spiritual. V'ilu b'matan Torah nizbat l'hagzeira. But by Matan Torah, that decree was nullified. V'nitna ha'efsharus l'chiber ha'gashmius v'haruchnius. And through the Torah, humanity was empowered to be able to make a connection between the spiritual and the physical. Matan Torah chidesh, Matan Torah innovated, shebekiyam mitzvos be'emtzaus chefetz gashmi, that through the act of doing a physical act with a physical object, na'aseh ha'gashmi atzmo ledavar kadosh, that physical object transforms into something holy. We take leather from a cow, and by writing some letters on it, we change it into a Sefer Torah that is now transformed into something spiritual. When we take a lulav and we shake a lulav, we transform it from a piece of a palm tree into something spiritual. But what happened before Matan Torah? In the second cell, in the bolded part, the Rebbe says, ha-mitzvos shekaimu ha-avos. But the mitzvos that the forefathers fulfilled, af shenasu be'emtzos chafetzim gashmiim, even though they may have also used physical objects, lo haisa lahen kol hashpa al hagashmi atzmo, they were not able to infuse them with holiness. V'hu nishar b'chumriyuso k'mikodem, and they remained in their physical state as they were beforehand. And then if we go to the next cell, the Rebbe explains why. And he says, Tam Hadavar, and the reason is, Mishum Shekiyam HaMitzvos Al Yedeya Avos Hayu B'Koach Atzmam. The reason why the forefathers were not able to imbue the objects that they did with a permanent holiness was because they did the mitzvos voluntarily on their own accord. V'lachein, and therefore, Lo Haya Behem HaYecholes L'Hachtir Kedusha B'Gashmi, Kipu'ulas ha-mitzvos la'acharei matan Torah. And therefore, they were not able to imbue them with holiness like we are able to after the Torah was given. And so what the Rebbe is explaining is sort of giving a deeper esoteric Kabbalistic explanation for what Rav Lichtenstein was saying, that the reason why this relationship between God and humanity is so important, because you're being commanded to. The reason why that's so important is because if we would try on our own accord to imbue something with permanent holiness, it wouldn't be possible. We're physical, finite, mortal human beings. We don't have a connection to the spiritual upper worlds of holiness, and we can't imbue something that's finite and physical with something that's infinite. The only way that we are able to do that is by God helping us out. And that's what the Torah did for us. The Torah gave us the ability, because we're acting as agents of God, because we are fulfilling the desire of the King, we are now able to imbue physical objects with spirituality that can have a permanent transformation of that object. And so in the last section, the Rebbe says, and that's why Avraham Avinu waited to circumcise himself, because the one mitzvah that he was commanded to do so, the one exception to this pre-Matan Torah dynamic, was the mitzvah of Mila, was the mitzvah of circumcision, which God explicitly told him about. If we look at the bolded part, Tam hashinoi shebemitzvas mila mishar hamitzvos shekaimu al yidei ha'avos. The reason for the difference between circumcision and the other mitzvos that the forefathers fulfilled, humishum tzivuyeha lemal milmala, was because of the command to do so, that the idea or the impetus for the fulfillment of that mitzvah was a divine command. V'lachein himtin Avraham Avinu b'kia mitzvas mila ad shenitztava me'akadosh baruch hu la'asoso. And therefore Avraham waited to fulfill the mitzvah of circumcision until after he was commanded to do so by God. It was not only that it was prohibited for Avraham Avinu to do before, but rather the voluntary nature of the Torah was fundamentally different than if God commands you to do that. And in order so that the Jewish people should have some idea or a foretaste of what the post-Matan Torah world will look like, God gave the forefathers one mitzvah where they would be able to imbue a physical object, their own bodies, with holiness. And that was why Avraham Avinu waited to fulfill the mitzvah of Mila, to fulfill the mitzvah of circumcision, only after he was commanded to do so by God. I want to finish with one more excerpt from a sefer, a Hasidish sefer, the Shem Mishmuel, who goes into a bit of a greater detail as to why we need the help of God, or what is the nature of a commandedness, help us bridge the gap between the physical and the spiritual. And he says that the reason why we're able to do that is because we become agents of God. There's a concept in halacha called shlucho shel adam kemoso. In legal terms, the agent is like the principal. If I sign a power of an attorney authorizing somebody to have control over my financial assets, then that person, for financial purposes, is me. Similarly, by mitzvos, if we decide to voluntarily perform a mitzvah, we're performing the mitzvah because we want to. And so we're limited by our human capabilities. We might be able to do great things, but we're inherently limited. When we do a mitzvah as an agent of God, then kiviyachal, as it were, we become an extension of God himself. And just like God can imbue physical with spiritual, so too we are able to do so as well. So just to sum up, there are two reasons why Avraham Avinu waited to fulfill the mitzvah of Mila, to fulfill the mitzvah of circumcision before being commanded to do so by God. One is because it may have been prohibited for him to do so, because even though he voluntarily wanted to do something that was good, there was an explicit command by God to the contrary, saying that nobody was allowed to wound themselves. And on a deeper level, waiting to be commanded was something that was so central to Avraham and the mission of the Jewish people to be able to imbue the physical with the spirituality. And that can only be accomplished by creating a relationship of commandedness, a two-way street between God and humanity. Volunteerism is wonderful. Volunteerism is wonderful for rounding out one's inherent goodness, to maximize their self-fulfillment as a good-giving person. And that cannot be denied. It is a wonderful, necessary thing that we need to do. But the reason why doing a mitzvah as commanded is perhaps even greater is because there's the added level of a two-way relationship that can only happen when there is a commander and a commandee. And so what I want to leave you off with is what we'll discuss next time, is that if that's the case, that life as we know it spiritually fundamentally changed after the Torah was given, and that in a certain sense we are on a higher level with the, and in a certain sense we're on a higher level than the forefathers, well then why do we revere them? What good did they give to us? We constantly invoke their merit and their relationship with God. But if volunteerism might be good, but is not as great as what we have now, then why, what did the Avos contribute in a lasting way to their descendants, to the Jewish people? So that's what I hope to talk about next time. So just as someone posted, so Mother Teresa's thought, so just to go back to Mother, the quote from Mother Teresa, I think it's very indicative of sort of the Jewish philosophy of volunteerism in terms of Jewish ideas. Yes, volunteerism is wonderful. But volunteerism, at least when it comes to mitzvos, needs to be done with the framework and mindset that we're not doing it to round out ourselves, but we're doing it as essentially trying to form a relationship between a commander and a commandee. And while we certainly do have free will, we are trying to make our will essentially the will of God. As the Shem Yishmuel said, we're trying to become a shliach of Hashem, an agent of Hashem, almost a tool in his hand, and therefore we become empowered with all of the power and capability that God has as well. So anybody, if they wanna share any questions, comments, thoughts, please feel free either to use the chat or to use the to unmute and share. Okay, well, it was wonderful. Was wonderful learning with you all. Very much looking forward. Very much looking forward to learning with you next time. And also, if anybody has any questions, please feel free to email me. You can email me. You can ask the shul, and I'll try to. I'll share my email on the chat.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Fantastic. So many wonderful ideas about encountering God.